Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, July the 19th, talking with our good friend George Rodriguez in South Texas. We're going to talk about a few things today. We're going to get some reactions to the GOP convention that ended Thursday night. Want to get some of George's perspectives on that. We're also going to talk about this in and out of President Biden. I mean, you're getting, you know, reports in the morning that he's going to be speaking on Sunday to announce that he's out. And now you're getting reports this afternoon that he's going back campaigning. I mean, so there's something going on there, some pretty bad stuff. So let me say hello to George. How are you, George?
How you doing? I'm real good.
Just great. It was 91 today, so I think we caught a little bit of a break, it looks like.
Yes. Here in San Antonio, we've had rain for almost 4 days in a row. And the temperature has been down. The humidity has been real bad. But right, the temperature has been down, and it's been nice. It's been very, very nice.
Well, it was 91 today, at least in the late afternoon when I checked it. Let me begin, George, with this incident with with the Secret Service. Obviously, we're grateful that the bullet missed by whatever it did. I mean, like an inch. It's incredible. I don't know if you've seen that graphic that shows the bullet just like literally just missing by nothing. I mean, so we're grateful that he was not killed. We're sorry about the firefighter who was killed, of course, and the two other people who were injured. But, you know, we're grateful for President Trump. I think this would have been a very difficult video tonight, George, if he had been assassinated.
Yes.
I mean, I think the country would have been really angry. But anyway, so thankfully he made it. Sorry about the fire chief, but as far as President Trump, he made it. What bothers me most, George, about the Secret Service, and by the way, the men on the ground, men and women there on the ground, I've got no problem with. I mean, I think they behaved bravely, and they put their bodies on top of the president. So I think they did what they were supposed to do. But what bothers me most about the leadership of the Secret Service, George, is they don't want to answer questions. I mean, here we have the president of the United States. It was an attempted assassination a week ago, almost a week. And we haven't had a press conference from the director saying, look, this is what we know. We're looking into this. We're looking into that. We'll keep you posted. George, we haven't heard that. This lady has not even done, I don't think she's even taken any questions, George.
This is going to be really, really bad for the nation. Situation where that we're looking at is that starting Monday, there's going to be, I believe, as many as five different hearings on the incident. And what's really bothering me about this is that in the Senate in particular, the Democrats are circling the wagons around this woman. And they are preparing their arguments, defending her, when clearly there's not too much to say about her defense. I mean, I know you're saying that, you're being very, very nice and saying that that they did their job. But I guarantee, my friend, in the time that I have been involved in preparing for presidential events, in particular presidential events, the preparation is meticulous. And what I have heard and what I have seen to date really disturbs me, really, really disturbs me.
Go ahead.
That they were not prepared, that they didn't look at the high spots is very, very disturbing to me. Returning the fire was done by police officers, people spotted this individual walking around with a gun before the event. All of those things, I mean, there should have been all sorts of triggering on that issue. And in fact, the event, in my opinion, should have been canceled.
Right.
When all of that was happening.
Right. He should have never, President Trump should have never been allowed to go on the stage.
Exactly.
When all those questions surrounding
him. And that individual, apparently, I mean, he even flew a drone a drone was flown over the area, and people and the law enforcement knew about it. Law enforcement, when I talk about law enforcement, I'm talking about both the Secret Service, as well as the sheriffs and police departments that are locally. They should be working. They should have been working hand in hand. What I've heard from the manager, from the city manager, what he has been saying on TV is that there was little coordination going on. The only coordination that was going on was that the Secret Service would tell him, you need to do this, you need to do that. Which, again, kind of bothers me, because the people on the ground are the ones that know, you know, the logistics. All of that really, really, really bothers me. And then on top of that, the woman refuses to answer any questions.
See, that's what that is, I think, that is a problem. Because
that is really bad.
That's a problem. Because I am willing to go as far as saying, you know, that obviously she wasn't the one there on the ground. That, you know, you could say that it was
she was in charge.
No, I understand. I understand that. And she should be fired. But what I'm saying is that if she had come out and say, look, we're accountable, I'm responsible for this, and we're going to have an investigation, and I'm on top of it, and so on and so on. But it's her silence that I think makes the whole thing.
Well, and then it's going to be complicated, because now they're going to defend her.
Right. And they're going to defend her, of course. And then it's going to get politicized, which is the worst thing that can happen. And this is nothing to do with politics. The same thing could have happened to Biden. The same thing could have happened to Harris. I mean, this is simply a breakdown in security, and you cannot have that with an election coming up. I mean, it's simply not acceptable. So again, you know, firing people, dismissing people, it's an easy thing to do, but it does upset me. It does upset me that there have not been any press conferences and no statements to the public saying, we don't know everything. This is what we know. We're investigating this. You know, sometimes they don't have to answer every question, because there may be investigations underway where secrecy is good.
And at least they could say that the matter is being looked into.
Exactly.
But they haven't even said that.
No, they haven't, because they haven't been seen in public. I mean, this lady, the director, has not done a press conference, which is really bad, which is very bad. So anyway, as you say, on Monday, it's going to get real hot next week, because there's a lot of anger in the Congress over this. I mean, a lot of anger.
You saw some of the senators corner her at the GOP convention. When was it? Last night or the night before? She actually showed up at the convention and they cornered her.
Right.
They followed her, asking her questions. And it was, again, she didn't answer anything. She just said that she was that things would be discussed at a later time, and that was not the place to discuss it. Right. I mean, she avoided the whole situation again.
Yeah, I mean, technically, and I'm not defending her, but technically, it's probably not the best place to discuss it. She's right about that. But if you're not going to answer any questions,
why show up?
Why show up? And you know, what do you expect from members of Congress or the public if you're not going to answer any questions? Well, the other big story, of course, is President Biden. Is he in or is he out? This morning, when we woke up and the headlines were aware, he's going to be announcing Sunday night that he's leaving.
Yeah.
That was pretty much the talk. Now, this afternoon, not long ago, the headline is that he's staying in, that he's going to be campaigning next week. He's starting to pick up some allies like AOC and Senator Sanders. Yeah. So I don't know what's going to happen, but at the very least, I see some divisions in this party, George.
I see some big, big divisions in the party. And, you know, again, the simple and best, from my perspective, if I was a Democrat party operative, I would see the best thing to do is for everybody to shut up and let him run. The worst that can happen is that he'll lose. That's it. However, this situation where they want to remove him, then what? Who are you going to put in? Are you going to let Kamala go in? Because Kamala, again, has opponents within the Democratic Party? Are you going to get somebody else to come in? And if you do that, how are you going to handle people that support Kamala? Right. I mean, they have painted themselves into a corner. And then on top of that, you've got the outside agitators like the pro-Palestinian people who are not going to go away. I mean, they are very much part of this party. And I'm not sure, you know, how they're going to be pacified. You can't pacify those people other than announce that you're going to obliterate Israel.
Right. And of course, all of those people are planning a mid-August vacation in Chicago.
Yes.
Because they're going to turn that place upside down. And I think the big question mark that I have is, let's assume that Kamala Harris gets in, or that she gets it. That would be the most natural thing to happen. Who is going to be her vice president? Because if you're an up-and-coming governor, like the governor of Michigan or Pennsylvania
or California
or whatever, why would you burn your, you know, why would you go down with a campaign losing? I mean, why not sit it out, wait until 2028? I mean, they're all young men and women. The governor of, you know, of Pennsylvania is a man in his 50s, so he's got plenty of time. And why not just sit it out and run in 28 and that just, you know, let this ticket in 2024 crash? Because if you become the vice president to Kamala Harris, you have to run on their policies. You have to defend their policies. Remember what happened to Hubert Humphrey in 1968. Hubert Humphrey, I mean, he had to defend Vietnam because that was the policy of his administration with President Johnson. So I think that they're going to have problems getting a VP for that reason, simply because why would somebody want to go down with a ship that is sinking? And Kamala Harris, as you know, has some problems of her own credibility. So in a way, George, maybe the best thing that could happen to them so that they don't blow up and kill each other would be for President Biden to stick around. That might be the best thing, George.
Well, that's exactly what I think. I mean, the best thing that could happen to the party is for him to stick around and then lose, and then they can put in whoever they want in the next 4 years afterwards.
Right.
The situation that they've got right now, it's almost like they're looking for self-destruction.
Right. No, I agree. And I think Kamala Harris is going to find out that there's a lot of opposition. I also think that there's going to be a lot of delegates who are going to say, hey, wait a minute, we voted for this guy. We had primaries. We voted for this guy. So, you know, why not just let us choose the candidates? There's an editorial in the Chicago Tribune basically saying, just let the delegates decide who the candidates are. You know, don't force it on them. Let them decide. Let's see how that. But no matter how you slice it, though,
well,
it's going to be
chaotic. Let me talk about that situation, because in that situation of the Democrats being Democratic, I find it so ironic that they've got super delegates, and that the super delegates are ultimately the ones that determine who is going to be the nominee, not the delegates, the super delegates. And Joe Biden and company are busy counting who the super delegates are on his side and which ones are against him. And, you know, this is what's really fascinating and ironic about the Democrat Party is that they're always screaming that they are defending democracy and that they are Trump is the threat to democracy, while they are everything but democratic.
Right.
They are political bosses.
Right. No, I know. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. A big threat to democracy. And look at what they're doing. Well, the interesting thing about it is that, you know, we're recording this on Friday night, and this is so fluid.
Things might change by tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it might change by tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon. So, you know, you got to keep all of those options open. But it's going to be interesting. I'll call you tomorrow if there's a sudden change, and then we can update the video. But, you know, who knows? Who knows where this is going? All I know is that they're not unified.
Yeah. Well, you know, they are. I mean, the best thing that's happening to them right now is that they've got time now to, they, now that they know who Trump's VP is, they now can really hone their attacks. I mean, they're calling him another racist and another threat to democracy, that J.D. Vance is not a self-made person, and that if he is, it's because he's a white male. I mean, they've got plenty of time on that.
Right. Well, they do, but they've only got 1 month to their convention also.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, they have that also to worry about. Well, I do think, George, and that kind of leads me to my next point, that you have a Democrat Party that is not unified, but then you have a Republican Party of 2024 that is extremely unified. I think that convention, at least on the surface, it looks like a very unified party. And when you're unified, as we've seen in previous elections, you have a much better chance of winning because your people are enthusiastic. They want to get out and vote. They're going to call their friends to vote. They're going to, get together on, have the little barbecues or whatever to encourage other people to vote. So an enthusiastic party is worth a lot of money in terms not worth a lot of money, but I mean worth a lot of votes in terms of getting people out to vote, George.
Yeah, it's, we're looking at a Republican Party that could steamroll. I mean, what we could be looking at is something similar to the situation that occurred in 1984 in the contest between Mondale and Reagan, where he virtually won every state except for Maryland and D.C.
Minnesota.
Or Minnesota.
And D.C., yeah.
And D.C. Yeah. I mean, it is, that's the possibility. However, my concern right now, my biggest concern is not necessarily the Democrats. My concern is the media. The media is already doing a number. To hear Joy Behar or Whoopi Goldberg make comments about Trump's little granddaughter, that she had no business speaking at the convention, that it was they were trying to humanize him, or to hear Joy Reid make a comment about how she doesn't believe that he was actually shot, that nobody has seen the wound. These people, they're going to do a worse number on Republicans than the Democrats are.
Look, they're going to do whatever they can. I guess if there is good news in that story, is they're not reaching that many people in their programs, that is.
Yeah.
And the people they reach, they've already converted. So it's not like they're talking to a lot of independents. I don't watch The View. I never really did. And it's more of a women's program, I guess.
That's just common.
I know, but I'm just saying that's who they cater to. It's kind of a mid-morning show. But I have seen the clips that they from time to time put up on the internet, and those are honestly, they're mean girls. I mean, those are not nice girls. I mean, there's nobody there who is really a very nice person. And I don't, I heard a joke that Elon Musk wants to buy ABC so that he can drop The View. That would be cool.
That would be good.
But the View is just, it's just simply, I don't think it's a program. If you watch The View or if you watch Joey Reid on MSNBC, you're obviously not learning anything new. You're basically just confirming the anger that you already have. That's all I can say, George. I mean, if you watch, if you watch other shows, sure. I mean, Sean Hannity is, he's to the right. Everybody knows that. But he does have guests on his show who are from the left. And he does have debates. But Joey Reid doesn't bring anybody from the right. And The View, why would anybody want to go on that show and have to put up with those ladies? I mean, what's the point?
Some people have, and they've regretted it.
Well, I know Ted Cruz was there a while back. He had a book that he was promoting, and I thought he did fairly well.
And so did Senator Scott was also on there recently.
Yeah, he was. But I mean, my goodness, they're not reaching that many people to begin with. So why would you waste? And that just tells me, it also tells me something, George, that when shows become that partisan, they're, in a sense, they're cheating their audience, because why would any Republican want to go on The View? Why would any Republican want to go on MSNBC? I mean, why? So they're cheating their audience by basically just, as you know, the old expression about singing to the choir or talking to the choir. That's all they do, George.
Well, but then you've also got the Washington Post and the New York Times that are also, not to mention the Atlantic Monthly, Texas Monthly, and a few others that are also already blasting the Republican ticket. But again, hopefully people will take them all with a grain of salt.
Well, I mean, as I say, there are believers who read that stuff, and all you can do is you know, they're going to buy it, they're going to consume it, but I don't think it's as many people as people think they are. But I mean, last night, for example, the convention, I was looking at some numbers. It was like five or six times the number of people who were watching the convention on Fox than on CNN or MSNBC. So, I mean, that tells you right there. Now, granted, maybe it'll be different for the Democrat convention. Maybe they'll get more numbers. But it's like, you know, these channels are not getting large audiences. So anyway, but my point about the unity, George, is that I think it's a very important quality to have unity in the party. And even though J.D. Vance was not my first choice, he did give a very good speech, I thought. And he does have a very good story. And they're already trying to nail him on something he said about abortion, or like, you know, they were over at MSNBC. They were joking with him about his burial place or whatever in Kentucky, saying that, you know, he's a white supremacist or something like that. But I guess I didn't know that if you wanted to get buried in Kentucky, that made you a white supremacist. I mean, it's crazy stuff like that these people, they're obsessed with race, George. I mean, it's really funny.
They are. I mean, you know, the definition of somebody that's obsessed with race is a racist. But
that's what I used to think. Yeah, that's what I used to think. But I do think it's a good ticket going forward.
I think it's excellent.
Excellent. And I think that it will do well. I think the ticket will do well. Of course, the big question now is, will it help? I think the Republican Senate, or the possibility of Republican Senate, looks pretty good right now. And then the possibility of keeping the House, at least at the moment, looks like it's good. So that could happen. You could have a Republican president with a Republican House and Republican Senate. And you know how important that is, George.
Yeah, I think the ticket is going to really help down ballot. I really do. I would hope that it would reach down ballot as far as the county and the city here in San Antonio.
Well, yeah, I don't know. But I do think it will do well in Texas overall. But part of the problem is that we're kind of gerrymandered. And I don't know if that's the right word, but I mean, it seems like we have counties that are very, very blue and counties that are very, very red. And it's almost predictable who's going to win.
Yeah.
So the question is, how much enthusiasm will there be?
Exactly.
And in Texas, that enthusiasm may give Senator Ted Cruz a pretty big victory. At the moment, he's like, the average is like, he's 8 points over Colin Allred. That's the average at the moment. He's like 8 points ahead in a bunch of polls. But if you have a lot of enthusiasm, he might get up to 10 in the campaign for the Senate. I mean, are you hearing anything about that campaign?
No, I mean, the thing that I'm hearing about, in fact, Ted Cruz's dad sat with me at dinner on Thursday a week ago, and we were chatting, and the Ted Cruz campaign is very, very, they're happy and they're comfortable, but they're still cautious.
Well, they should be cautious. Nobody should take it for granted.
Yeah, I mean, they're ahead comfortably. And, you know, the biggest question, again, is that what message do the Democrats have at this point? Not to mention the chaos that's going on at the top of the ticket. So,
Yeah, I mean, that's going to have an impact. That's going to have an impact. I think Joe Biden is probably their best chance in Texas, not to win, but to do better. I mean, if they, I don't think Kamala Harris is going to be very popular in Texas, for example. So I think Joe Biden still has a little bit of that, more of that connection to the old Democrat Party that Kamala Harris doesn't have.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting on that is, you know, like you mentioned at the very beginning, that Bernie Sanders and AOC are supporting him or are backing Biden to stay in, you know, as the presidential candidate. Joaquin Castro and Julian Castro here in San Antonio have asked that he step down.
Right.
Which shows the crack goes very, very much deep and far.
They're not a united party, and I think you and I remember talking about this a few years ago. When he was selected in 2020, I mean, President Biden, or then Vice President Biden, he was selected because they were scared to death that Bernie Sanders was going to win.
Right.
So they dug up Biden and said, you got to run because we got to stop Bernie Sanders. My point in bringing this up is that this is a party that is very much to the left. And this is a party, if you look at the base, it is a lot closer to Bernie Sanders than to Joe Biden, if you can believe that. And the base is very, very leftist. And that's what's going to show up in the convention. This is a party to the left, and in some cases, way to the left, George.
And they're not going to be quiet.
Well, that's the other thing. They're not a quiet party.
It'll be very entertaining.
It will be, and it's going to be good TV, as they say. Well, George, thank you so much for the time, and thank you for joining us tonight. And we will do it again if they ever make a decision on President Biden. We'll talk about it sometime next week. But
we may be talking about it for the next month.
Yes, that's just fascinating what's happening to the Democrats. Well, thank you so much, George. I really appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Our good friend, right now, the parties right now are in totally different situations. The Republicans after that convention, very unified. The Democrats are not unified right now. That doesn't mean, I always want to caution people, let's not get overconfident. That doesn't mean that the Democrats cannot get it together, okay, and be much stronger by Labor Day, let's say. So we don't want to get overconfident. But at the moment, I think the Republicans have a much stronger hand to play than the Democrats because, frankly, we're more united. They're not. They have deep divisions. These divisions have always existed in the party, and I think you're going to see them in full display. I really believe that. You're going to see them in full display in the Windy City of Chicago when they get together next month. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.